As you know, Shane runs all of our first-party games development. He's the vice president of MGS. And Chris Satchel is GM of XNA games development, that whole set of things. So I think you should get good answers to all your questions here. Everything's pretty much on the record, so whatever you want to write about, report. I think we're going to record the other session here. Looks like we've already got a couple of quarters set up, just so y'all know. Anybody have any objections to that, let me know. All right. So that's kind of it. Let's kick things off. Anybody have the first softball question?
Absolutely.
Yeah. User-created content. Where is it?
It's here.
It's here.
Yeah, I mean, we all have already enabled that in the platforms through LSP.
Uh-huh.
And Forza 2 is going to support user generated content. You roll your eyes, but it's.
That's a kind of a shifty answer.
I'm not trying to be shifty.
I know. It's okay.
First of all, tell me who you are and who you're.
So I
can remember this.
Let me interrupt because I think that's actually a good idea. Let's just go around the room. We'll come right back to you, Adam. In fact, we'll start with you. Why don't you
Adam Levine, GamerAndy.com.
Go ahead.
Nick Sleffner, The Opinions.
Chris Grant, Joystick.
And John.
Richard Mitchell, 360 Fanboy.
Ron Workman from the Internet.
The Internet.
Would that be the whole Suma. Internet? Or?
Robert Suma from Destructoid.
Michael Wolf, I'm on the Big Windows PR team at Microsoft.
Jan Jung from Google Laptop.
Michael Sankey, Saul from Slashdot.
Brian Krasenki, Kotaku.
I heard of you.
You got balls.
You weren't invited to this, Brian.
Did you make Sony mad the other day?
Chris Satchel.
I'm Spencer from Silicon Era.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I actually have a question written down.
We forgot Ryan at the end of the table.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Grant Bach and Gadget.
Yep.
And Larry Herb, Major Nelson.
Stay back here.
Thanks. Okay. Back to you, Adam.
With the new connectivity between Vista and the 360, when can we expect to see Microsoft deliver on user-created content a la the infamous Velocity Girl? Is that better?
No, it's a great question. What we're doing, I'm going to answer from a platform standpoint. What we're doing first is putting in place the platform foundation in order to be able to enable that to happen. I mean, that's I think, the biggest difference between our approach and that of competitors, which is really making sure that we put in place the technology foundation and the tools that will enable users as well as developers to be able to, you know, create those types of scenarios. And that's what we focused on. And then what you're going to start to see in MGS titles is us starting to take advantage of the platform capabilities and adding those features, whether it's user-generated content or us being able to create. Isn't that bad?
No.
No.
Giving you space.
No. To create content on the PC platform, for example, for Xbox 360 users. So that what we've really tried to focus on is putting in place the platform, because that's really what the XNA effort is about, what Xbox 360 and Xbox Live now coming over to Windows is for. I'm really confident that you're going to see, you know, not only users but also game creators, all of the things that we're trying to do, start to take advantage of what we're talking about. We all share the same vision of what we want to enable, right? But in terms of what we're going to deliver as a company, we're pretty focused on enabling that in the platform first, and then the content will follow.
Yeah, I mean, we have the technical infrastructure both with the distribution medium, with Xbox Live, Xbox Live Marketplace. If you want to extend it, we have LSP solutions, which is what Chains Group's using in Forza Motorsport, and what a lot of other publishers are used. But we want to go beyond just user-generated content within, like, AAA blockbuster titles. It's okay. You know, the step that one of my groups is taking is XNA Game Studio Express, and saying, well, what about creating whole titles and then sharing those online across PC and on Xbox 360? So that's our vision for the rest of this year, is that, okay, we've got the great tools out there. It's been incredibly popular, but it's adding sort of that sharing site on there, so you can now upload your games and share them across everybody on the Xbox Live community, both on Xbox and Game for Windows Live. And I think that's a really important step as well, because there's a ton of creativity out there. We're seeing it already, and it's just got to get people that way to share it.
When are they going to know?
Sorry?
When are they going to know?
When are they going to know?
When are average kids going to know how to use XNet?
Average kids? Well, we will.
I mean, is there going to be a marketing thing about it? Is there going to be anything to push it? Because a lot of people have no idea. Like, really? I mean...
Well, we've had 212,000 downloads of the tool set in 3 months. So I think that's pretty good. I mean, that's a lot of people. You think that's, what, 8 to 10x the number of professional programmers in the industry have already downloaded that and are building things with it. We will definitely have marketing behind it. We're also doing things like the Dream Build Play competition, which really kind of gets that flywheel going. Because you're right, you want to sort of spur people and get them really into it.
People need to know.
And... Yeah, with Dream Build Play, you know, if you win the competition, you're going to get a contract to get your game published on Xbox Live Arcade. So that's your shot at the big time. But the other thing is we're working with universities around the world, because that's also where this next generation of talent comes from. And we've had incredible uptake from universities. So I think they will be promoting it. And then really, this is a type of community that kind of promotes within itself as well. And we have 50 enthusiast sites so far. And they do a lot of community work themselves. And so I think it's there's a lot to be said for sort of the viral community with this kind of creative endeavor.
Well, how much do you think XNA is going to be something that kids will know?
I think it will take some time, but I think they definitely will. I mean, we're reaching out beyond universities as well to high schools and below high school education, like Giant Campus, things like that, where kids who are like, you know, 10 to 15 can get to use it.
That's where in a year it's going to change everything.
And that's why we did the Garage Games deal, because, you know, if you're like 11 or 12, even jumping in at the C-sharp level, even though it made it easy, it's probably too hard. So what we do is we license technology from our partners so that they could just use the drag and drop development tools. And, you know, that's another important thing, sort of lowering that barrier to entry.
Right. One of our readers asked right before I leave, actually, today, right before I left, when's it coming out for Vista?
April. So we've got a 1.1 release coming in April. We took a whole bunch of feedback from the community. It's about 150 to 200 changes we've made in the core tool set. But one of the big changes is it now supports Windows Vista. Okay. I mean, you can actually do it now, but it takes some monkeying. We're going to take away the monkeying and so you can just use it.
Yeah. What about I'm sorry to interrupt. We've got a couple more people that came in. I'll just let you introduce yourselves really quickly. Susan,
hi, Susan Arndt. I'm from Wired Game Life.
Simon Carlos, Games at Watch is the blog, but I also edit Gamma Sutra and Games Development Magazine, so I'm like a self blogger. Play the sound or something.
Okay. What about the hardware? I mean, and I don't know how many people have had this experience, but if you count my debugs and my retail, I'm on my 8th Xbox 360. Well, I mean, and people, I think. Suddenly forgotten who it was. Oh, Dean did this story where he talked to someone who was on their 7th. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that something? How are you guys addressing that? And what's the deal with the breakdown?
Well, I mean, it's unfortunate people have had problems with their Xbox 360. I mean, it's a pretty complicated piece of hardware. I think some issues are going to be normal for any complicated piece of hardware like that. That said, obviously, we're trying very hard to deliver the highest quality experience, both in the hardware and the software possible, right? And we've got a ton of engineers who are working on that, constantly working on that. I think the other aspect of this is that we're working very hard to address and make sure people have a good experience with us. And is when you do have a problem, is that we handle that really well from a customer standpoint. And there's no question, I think, that we've got room for improvement on both sides of that equation, and I can tell you it's a top priority for us. As well as everything else that we're doing in live and in content and development, just as much in terms of what we do in the system software, as well as in the hardware platform, we're working pretty hard to address those issues, both in the quality as well as the customer support side.
How much does competition affect what Microsoft does with the 360? How much do you look at what the competition is doing and trying to improve upon that and or go in a direction that's unique?
Yeah, I got asked this question a lot before we launched, and Sony was making a lot of announcements last year and so forth, and my answer has been pretty consistent about this, which is we're really not in a reactive mode at this point. And we've got a strategy that we've had in place for going on 4 to 5 years now for Xbox 360 and what we're going to do in this generation. And we're in full execution mode. And there's going to be obviously places where we'll adjust. I mean, in content, some titles will work out, some titles won't, things like that. I think the success of Nintendo with the Wii in a particular customer segment has certainly told us that we need to do better with that customer segment, make sure that we're addressing that segment well. But in general, we feel pretty good about the strategy that we have. It's a massive program, as you might imagine, across all of Xbox 360, starting with on the development tool side, and all the way to content and sales and marketing. And we feel really good about the strategy that we have. I think we'd say, from a competitive standpoint, the competitive situation is better for us than when we kicked off the program. So we're going to just continue to go out and execute. I mean, there's no shortage of resources and investment going against the whole program, so we'll just continue to play that out right now.
Earlier this week, Game Informer pointed out that Live on Vista is going to have the same tiers as on the Xbox. It's going to be free silver and then not overly expensive, but gold is going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
Slashdot users are cranky, and a lot of them are...
he does say.
Yeah.
You just end the sentence right there, really.
And
they love Microsoft.
Indeed. They're really big fans of Windows gaming. But actually, they are. They're huge PC gamers. How are you guys going to convince them that they should pay for stuff that they get in other games for free?
Yeah.
I was going to go ahead. You can start with this one. I mean, I think it's the same reason that people... you can say with Xbox, okay, well, there wasn't an online service, so, hey, people are going to try it. But unless you actually have a really great service, you won't retain people. They will just churn out. And I think Windows gamers are going to enjoy a lot of the same things people have enjoyed on Xbox, like easy matchmaking, a secure service, very little cheating, communication, voice chat, text chat with a big set of engaged users and a very cohesive community, gamer score, all the things that you've, achievements, everything you've got... on Xbox, it's sort of that way with Windows, and I don't think you could keep getting $4 a month from people, even though it's not a lot of money, as you said. They would churn out if it wasn't a great service. I also think you get a lot of people that are dual gamers and people that are interested in that sort of large gaming community, and that connection across to the 6 million people on Live is going to be really attractive as well, especially as they probably have a whole bunch of friends that play on Xbox. And so I think some of those things are going to get people really engaged in that online community, even though it means paying. In the end, if you're into gaming, it's probably a reasonable price to pay to get a better online gaming experience.
Is there any interest in doing hosted servers?
Hosted in terms of...
I'm sorry, you guys hosting servers for games in the future?
Well, one thing that we've... tell me if I'm answering the question correctly, but I mean, one of the things we focused on with Halo 2 on Vista was actually allowing people to self-host. So we do have the concept of dedicated servers that people can host themselves, which I think is an important... I think that's one of the great things about PC gaming is that ability to find a server you like to play on. And so people host it, go play on that server. And so we've brought that to Games from Windows Live as well to keep what's really great about PC online gaming.
I guess I think my question was dedicated servers hosted by you folks that have like guaranteed levels of bandwidth and uptime and that sort of thing. Because I think there are a lot of games that support that people really...
Yeah, I think in a moment that's not something we're concentrating on. It'd be interesting if we had feedback on it, but I think it's really, publishers have the ability to go and do that, just like they do in the normal PC space. If they found, hey, for this game, we should just be hosting a set of our dedicated servers to either get the community spun up or just to offer a certain level of service, then they would be able to plug in and do that.
I think there's no question, just adding on to what Chris said, I mean, there's no question that the PC space is a lot different than the Xbox and Xbox 360 space, right? Because there is choice out there. And if we don't do a good job differentiating the features that are available in the silver and the gold level tiers of membership, there's even more competition on the PC side, and we'll know that very, very quickly, right? So we're banking on the fact that the success that we've had on the Xbox side, because it's the only option available there, doesn't mean that we... don't have to go out and earn the subscriptions of people. And, the vast majority of the 6 million members that we have on Live are subscribers. So if we don't, you know, if we haven't done a good job of providing a great service there, and the same will be true on the Windows side, you know, those people will obviously won't stay with us. And there are other options out there. We're banking on the fact that we've created a great unified service that has a lot of great sticky features that go across games. You know, on a per-game solution, fine. You know, you'll probably be able to find a competitive things, but we don't think people can bring together across games on the platform like we can. And then you integrate it with the Xbox side, and I think that's pretty powerful.
To have a follow-up on that numbers, on the 6 million number. Mm-hmm. So on my Xbox 360, I have three accounts, two of which are gold, one silver. My girlfriend has an account. Two roommates have accounts. My dad has a silver account for when I bring it home.
Mm-hmm.
Are you counting all of those in the 6 million figure?
That's a great question. I actually don't know how we break that down.
We did a scrub before we announced that figure to try and get it as close as possible to actual users.
That's certainly.
And we can't ever guarantee 100%, but we tried as much as we could to get a real realistic number by scrubbing the database as much as we could.
We're not saying that it's 6 million unique Xbox 360. That's not a claim that we're making. But to Chris's point, one thing that we did do before we announced the 6 million figure was that we did scrub it and said, look, you know, we're taking the inactive people out and so forth. So we feel pretty good that it's a pretty active membership.
So I wanted to ask about PartnerNet, because I wrote a post, perhaps hyperbolically, called "Why PartnerNet is a PR Nightmare for Microsoft" a couple of weeks ago.
So it wasn't sensational at all. It was just a low-tone piece.
Yeah, yeah. But on the other hand, there do seem to be people who will immediately delete whatever appears on PartnerNet. And in that sense, considering a number of those games are unannounced, and like even someone tried to leak Katamari Damacy, whether that's actually true or not. There was certainly something upon there at that point. So, you know, so I was wondering, is there any kind of plan to... It seems like maybe some kind of press net, which is separate to PartnerNet, might deal with this kind of odd NDA problem where I sometimes have arguments. I had an argument with Chris Kohler at White News about whether he should have done a preview of Street Fighter based on a new version that was on PartnerNet, which is actually a little bit confusing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we obviously really, really don't want any of our partners' confidential information getting out, because we want them to be able to, like, you know, talk to the public about the games and the timing they choose. It is really unfortunate that people leak stuff from PartnerNet. And you're right, it's kind of weird to have the development network that everybody uses be the same one that, say, the press use early on. However, there is a huge amount of overhead in running each of the networks. We have three different networks we run. We have the production net, PartnerNet, and one we use inside for certification. And having a separate one would equally be, you know, would be a lot of overhead. And even then, I don't know if it's going to solve all the problems, because that network's still going to be earlier than sort of public announcement, and if people on that network leak it, you still got the leak problems. So I think the best thing we can do is keep really trying to educate people to say, look, try and respect the confidentiality of our partners. And it is unfortunate every time it leaks. I don't think we've had a lot of leaks. When you think about the sheer number of games in development for Xbox 360 using PartnerNet, it is a really small percentage. So I think most people treat it really responsibly.
But actually, I think that most things that go up on PartnerNet do get leaked. But on the other hand, some people... I'm wondering whether some developers don't put stuff up on PartnerNet because they're a little bit concerned about that. Because I think Jetpack did get leaked pretty quickly when it was up there. So I don't know. That's just a comment.
Yeah, but I mean, PartnerNet used for more than just hosting, you know, casual games ready for download. I mean, all developers use it for their live development. So there's hundreds of games going on in development on PartnerNet at the moment, which is why I said it doesn't seem like, you know, everything gets leaked.
Yeah, fair.
We do stuff internally, like, you know, we had one where it's like, do not use your PartnerNet account once you get home, you know, because otherwise you have all the achievements on it, because we're working with developers.
Yeah.
And they get upset about that. So we've tried to do anything we can on the Microsoft side to really keep it as separate as possible.
Cool.
Speaking of arcade, what's the matter with it? I mean, we've lost three key members of the arcade team in the last couple months. There's been huge gaps, and for the last year we've been told that there's a backlog. It's filling up. You know, you're not going to have these gaps. There's going to be so many games, you're going to get two a week even, you know? And even here, a year later, we're getting gaps of two a week, add-on pack, retro game, 2 weeks empty. I mean, is it the certification process that's holding it up? Is it the loss of these executives? I mean, is that team taking a hit?
No, I think it's... So I've tried it with each bit on sort of each part of the question.
Separate
things there. I mean, the executives moving on. So having Greg move on. I mean, Greg did a great job building up Xbox Live Arcade. But I think it's a great time for him to go and try something new. And there's people coming up with a ton of passion and that will, you know, really want to do and some new things with the service and keep improving it. And Greg did an amazing job getting it to where it was. I mean, that was purely a personal decision. He wanted to try something new. It's tiring. Starting up a whole new kind of platform like Arcade, that can kind of, you know, take a lot of effort out of you. So I think it's a great move for Greg. I'm fully confident in the team we have there now. With Brian Trussell, who's been involved with Arcade ever since the beginning, just like Greg has, and was a GPM for a long time. So having Brian Trussell run that Casual Games and run Arcade. We still have Chris Early running all of Casual Games, who's it's in Shane's group. So we still have the same executive group pushing it and driving it. And we've even put a lot more resources on that whole area now in Casual Games to really push that. So on the sort of staff, talent, executive side, I feel great with who's in there now. And I think Shane probably echoed the same sentiment. Mm-hmm. In terms of the pipeline, there's a big pipeline of games. I don't think certification's the blockage. I mean, we have a really good certification process. But even though the games fit into 50 megs or now 150, they're real. You know, it's still games. It's still hard to do. And, you know, people are getting more and more ambitious with what they're attempting. And so I think some of it's just, unfortunately, a bunch of delays on the developer side happened at the same time, which kind of left us with some gaps. But we're working as much as we can to try smooth out that pipe and help the developers so they can get the games released. And we had, which one was released this week? Was it Lemming?
Words
this week. Yeah.
After a delay, which they said was largely due to the certification process.
Well, the certification process is down to a couple of things. I mean, if developers have bugs in their code, you can't let it out.
Why are you complaining about the certification process? Do you want bad games?
The question was, it's part of it due to the certification process.
It's not straight emulation like the Virtual Console as well. I mean,
no, this is native code running on the console. So it's the fact that developers struggle to finish off their games to a point where we think they're fit to release to the public. We insist on the quality level. So there's nothing actually wrong with the process, it's just software development's tough. Just like you get with big games, you have bugs in there that you have to work out, and if you can't fix them in time, the game ends up slipping, because we don't want to just ship out a game that's going to break. And so you do get delays like that. We get it in AAA titles all the time, we get it in casual titles.
I think the other thing I'd add, too, is that when we started Arcade, I think there was a real focus on trying to make sure that it was a great experience for people, and so probably, I think most people would say, we were pretty careful about the concepts that were approved and things like that, right? And clearly the whole service has taken off and has become extremely popular with people. And we probably made some. This is probably one area of the program where we might have created some expectations that we haven't been great at delivering on. Right? And I think what you're going to see is that it will open up more. Now that we've got a base of pretty high-quality stuff up there that people have become used to Xbox Live Arcade as a service, as a concept, I'm talking about customers, that now, you know, we'll also, you'll see more content start to arrive, whether it's 1, 2, 3, Wednesday, I don't really know. But I just know that, in general, our approach to that is to enable more people to bring more content to Arcade. Just because developers want it, customers want it. We'll have to figure out how to make sure that customers can have a good experience navigating additional content. It's actually an area where we have a lot of experience over on the MSN game side, for example. But what you're seeing right now is, as Chris was saying, is the transition from more of a go slowly approach. Of course, when you go slowly and you don't have as many concepts in production, when you do have things that hit snags and cert, you're going to have these places where you've got dry weeks, and that's not good because we didn't create that expectation. So I think that situation is going to turn around too, and I'll echo what Chris said about the execs leaving, and it's part of my organization. And the good news is that we built an organization that can certainly survive the departure of people, and there's plenty of people who can step up and are ready to step up. So I don't think we're going to skip a beat there.
Speaking of snags, as far as Xbox Live, what are you guys doing to improve performance of games online? And even more specifically, I'm talking about games like Rainbow Six, which, I mean, I love it. I think it's one of the best online games out right now, but it will every once in a while constantly suffer from lag issues and things like that. And that's kind of been a problem across the board for a lot of games online for Xbox 360. Are you guys being proactive in that, and are you doing anything to make sure that that kind of thing is stable?
Yeah, the one. So I'll definitely answer the question. I've challenged that lag issues are any worse on Xbox 360 than any other online environment.
Well, I mean, PS3 resistance is smooth. I've never had a lag issue.
the one online game on PS3 is smooth.
I'm just saying.
But I mean, it's the same. So I can't help but wonder. So
that, though, too.
Well, yeah, the developers did an amazing job of hiding latency with the game client software. If you believe it's a great game, or everybody you've talked to just happens to have a low latency connection to their ISP, there's a couple of ways that could happen.
Well, and it's on dedicated servers.
Well, that doesn't really help the latency issue, because you've still got to go through the same infrastructure to the ISP, out to the dedicated server and back again. In fact, if you run a dedicated server isn't any better, because the software side really doesn't add a lot of latency with a peer-to-peer network. So some of it, we're dealing with the same physical constraints everybody else is dealing with, which is why I kind of challenge the concept a little bit, because it's like, well, you're doing the same connection to the ISP, you're going through your cable modem, or you're going through your DSL modem, that adds a little bit of latency, the same as you get for everyone, you've got the same infrastructure out to the ISP and back. So we're all kind of dealing with the same world. Now what changes, and what we can focus on, is how well do game developers code to hide that latency from you? Because, you know, internet latency is 110 milliseconds plus, maybe a little lower if you're lucky, but really it's around that sort of range. That's within perception anyway, so you get a lot of code that's there to kind of just hide the fact that there's this latency in response. And some developers do a better job than others depending on the game complexity, what they're trying to achieve. What we can do to help is provide them with great networking software so that they spend more time focusing on that and less on just the plumbing side.
So you are providing help for them.
Yeah, we've added some new libraries to our developer kit, which means they spend a lot less time trying to deal with like just the pure connection side of it and transferring bits around, and they spend more time focusing on the algorithms on top that hide that latency and make a great play experience. But I think you'll find, you know, some developers just deal with it better than others. For whatever reason, the development process, they started it earlier, or they just have, somebody was available that's great at it. And I think you can find games on Xbox 360 that are just as lagless as Resistance. But you've just got a much wider set of games. And so, just by sheer probability, some of them, because of their game style or whatever, won't handle latency as well.
I think this goes a lot to the heritage of our company and the approach that we've always taken since we got into the Xbox business, which, you know, Chris runs a game developer group, which is a pretty big group. And their goal, I mean, their reason for being is make sure that we help developers create the best experiences possible on our platforms. And the other aspect of that is that Chris's group, I mean, Chris used to be director of engineering for Microsoft Game Studios. So Chris's group and my group work extremely closely together. And in general, MGS, we're charged with trying to, provide a leadership on our platforms, right? We can try to do things that maybe other developers and publishers wouldn't do necessarily right out of the gate. And then as we do those things, as we learn some of those hard lessons, we integrate them back into the development platform, make that information, that even that technology, available to third parties on our platform so that they can get the best.
How involved do you get, though? Like, let's say, for instance, Rainbow Six, if you see that there's constantly complaints about it, if you see for yourself that there's constantly issues, how involved are you with the publisher and or developer to just continue, even after the game's released, to work with them on the issue?
It's really as involved as the publisher wants to be. So okay. We will offer our services, definitely. Say, hey, we've seen this, we've seen these comments. Or they often come to us and say, hey, we've seen these comments. If they would like our help, we'll definitely go and help them. And it just depends where they are and what they have that development team doing now. But publishers have a great game and they want our help. We'll definitely go out and help them with it could be graphics performance, it could be stability, it could be network performance, but we have a team of people that do nothing but that. So a lot of it is just how willing are they to fix the issues for their community if they do find issues after release.
And it's fair to say publishers and developers are much more open to our support than they used to be 3, 4, 5 years ago, right? Because I think
we've built up
back
trust.
Back then people were concerned about Microsoft, frankly, and whether or not the first party would be getting an advantage out of getting information from third parties. And I think we really dispelled all of that. And that's, again, goes back to we have a lot of experience in working with developers because of Windows. Yeah, and being able to bring that that heritage and those that experience and that approach and all of that over to what we do in the game development side has really helped us. And we think that's a big competitive advantage for us.
So I hate Midway arcade games. They all use the same UI, and they pump out so many of them that it seems like they've taken Xbox Live Arcade as an open invitation from Microsoft to flood the service with really, frankly, crappy games that don't feel like there was a lot of work put into them, and yet charge comparable prices on the arcade.
do you, has Microsoft thought about how maybe this is hurting this platform?
Well, gosh, I just heard that we don't have enough games on our
Well,
so
Root Beer Tower, Paperboy.
No, your point's a great one. It's a tricky, it's Paperboy, a, right, on. It's a tricky...
$4?
Paperboy! Paperboy!
I concur. 100%. I don't know. Paperboy.
Maybe Tower, but Paperboy.
You're
20
years old. I'm 32. Paperboy. No brainer.
Don't forget Paperboy is still the number 2 Xbox Live arcade game. In 3 weeks, I don't know.
Well, just take Andy's point, though, just to abstract it for a second, not make it about Paperboy specifically. I mean, to me, I do actually think that we do need to make it possible for developers and publishers to bring more content to customers. And it really is. I mean, it's no different than the retail world, right? I mean, but if a publisher, I'm not going to single out any publisher. But if a publisher is going to produce crappy content out there, I mean, customers are eventually, you know, going to turn their backs on that publisher or that developer and not going to buy that content and so forth. Does it hurt the overall service? I don't think we're at that point. I mean, there's bad games on Xbox 360, right, just as much as there are good games.
So when you're only pumping out one game a week,
that I agree with. That I agree with. Right. So when it exacerbates the problem. There's no question. When it's part of a limited choice set, no question. You're right. So I think, and it's not going to be seamless. But as you open up the pipe to more content being there, I think there'll be more choice. But there's also the potential for more things that people don't like.
If you see what we're looking at, the games we've announced this week, a lot of our focus is now not on those just arcade classic. It is on other games that we're bringing out. Certainly from my group's point of view, we want to do whatever we can to help that by, with X-Men Game Street Express, we have a new development platform that's much easier to build on. And I think that will get more people involved in arcade, more people involved in creating games. I think that will directly help the problem that you've highlighted.
Well, yesterday, though, you said, at the presentation, you said that by the end of this year, you're looking to have one game out using XNA. So that doesn't seem like it will really help, unless you're planning on scaling back production exponentially.
I think it was at the presentation yesterday, but I wasn't at the presentation.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It could have been Dave Mitchell, my director.
Dave Mitchell, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so there's one game that we're prepared to announce at the moment that we know will be on Xbox Live Arcade using Game Street Express by the end of the year. That doesn't mean there aren't more in development, but there's only one we can announce right now. Because
get to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first,
speaking of these retro games and people being disappointed when they come out, I think part of that, again, is that there's only one game a week, and that half the time we don't know what it is until 2 days before. Do you think Xbox Live Arcade will ever reach a point where we might have, say, a release calendar so people can say, oh, Paperboy's out this week. Oh, but Worms is out next week. You know, so they have something to look forward to.
I think it'd be a great idea.
No, absolutely. I mean, we've got to start marketing it differently. I mean, again, I think, just honestly speaking, that Xbox Live Arcade started small and it's really mushroomed into something much bigger. And I think, frankly speaking, probably caught some folks internally by surprise. And so I think the approach was right, which was try to manage it so we have a great experience up there. Like I said before, I think we did create some expectations where there would be more content flowing, and that's our bad, no question about that. But going forward, as we get more content up there, we can become a lot more structured, more proactive in terms of how we market arcade, how we communicate what's coming, what the future release calendar is going to be. You got to have more titles. You got to work with the publishers. It's not our content.
Speaking with new content, like, are you guys publishing every extended extreme extra, or that was like the big surprise, I guess, for like the Xbox Live. I was wondering if you guys had any more details on that, or the rumored Ikaruga revival, Raise 4.
Sorry, I don't know the specific titles that you're referring to. That doesn't mean that we're not. I just don't know the specific titles.
I had a game specific question. I guess mostly for Shane. I was just wondering, really, ultimately, what happened with Viva Pinata and what happened to it being as important as Gears. And I know Microsoft is still interested in continuing the brand, but it seems like that's right now kind of destined to be one of the great, like, you know, industry tragedies of, like, getting critical acclaim and largely being ignored by.
Well, that's just because it's for girls.
No, it's not.
I'm just saying what Bill says.
Tara, that game. I have no idea why.
Bill says that his girls like it.
Oh.
He didn't say that it's just for girls.
Okay.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay.
Right. It was fun to watch. Right.
Yeah.
But I, no, sort of goes back to what I said about Nintendo and Wii. And that customer segment, and I don't regret saying what I said about it being as important as Gears of War.
I still
believe that. And I think, if anything, the company believes it more and more. We know, look, it goes back to our aspiration in this generation is to win. And I'd say that we're better positioned than when we kicked off the program to win this generation. So in order to reach those goals, to win the generation, you absolutely have to break into the mass market. And we do a pretty good job with the core, but we've got to break into the mass market. And titles like Viva Pinata, titles like Banjo, and titles that come from our third parties are super important to that. You're not going to see us backing off from that franchise in any way. In fact, I think you're going to see us do more with that franchise, with that set of characters, with that property. And I'm not announcing anything today, but that is a super important property to us because we think the property is great, but also because that customer segment is so important to the overall program. So I'm still keeping the faith, you know, as far as, I mean, the support, certainly the support from the core customer and the core press has been awesome. Rare created a game that people really enjoy.
It just feels like in the long run, that type of game could be more important than Gears of War ultimately, because it's kind of market, you know, fun. But it seems like there's a lack of marketing and stuff on Microsoft's end that really prevents it from really reaching some sort of like mainstream awareness outside of cartoon.
Yeah, I've heard that criticism. I think you have to be, you do have to be honest. I mean, with titles like Cameo and Viva Pinata and other third-party E-rated titles that say targeted at a younger audience. I mean, you do have to acknowledge the fact that the platform itself is still priced at its launch price, right? And we're not at a mass market price point yet. So we also are living with the legacy of Xbox V1, which was very much in most people's eyes, a hardcore box. We didn't do a good job with the mass market audience there. We didn't bring enough content over there, blah, blah, blah. And so we're still trying to undo that legacy, if you will. And that's just going to take a lot of spade work. It's why we launched Cameo at the start, which most publishers would never do. And a lot of publishers wouldn't launch Viva Pinata in the second holiday with the console still priced where it's at. But that's the work that we have to do to start turning things around. We've actually are getting even more dedicated, more focused on this customer segment, partly because of what Nintendo has done with Wii, but because we know we have to do that if we want to reach our goals.
Well, you can't sort of wait until you think the audience is there to deliver content the audience wants. Like, you know, the first 10 million people are going to be hardcore game players, but not that Viva doesn't appeal to them, but you sort of, you know, got to have the content out in front of the people you want to come to the system, not go, well, I'll tell you what, once you buy it, we promise we'll get you some. You need to, like, show them that the content's going to be there.
Well, do you think that Xbox Live Arcade in some way hurts the innovation or the developers' willingness to be innovative outside of arcade? Like, do they think that retail games need to be mainstream and innovative games need to be Xbox Live Arcade?
No, I don't think that. I think that commercial pressure means that you get a certain amount of games that are sequels, a certain amount that are based on licensed properties, and that's just a factor of life when games cost as much as they do. I mean, yeah, a lot of my friends are game developers, and given half a chance, they'd be creative no matter what you do for them. I think it's great that they have an outlet, so, I mean, you know, they'd be creative in their AAA products. It's great to have an outlet for them, so in Xbox Live Arcade, they can be creative. And certainly what we're seeing with Game Studio Express is we have a lot of professional developers that picked it up and are doing projects in their spare time, and they're using that as yet another outlet for creativity. So I definitely don't think they abdicate it just because there's other different channels. Designers and developers, they really want to be creative.
I really do think that things like Arcade and XNA really actually help to mitigate the business pressures that Chris talked about. I mean, that it's actually, I think, a much bigger challenge for the industry. It's the fact that because it's such a risky business and the cost of development have increased so dramatically, you do have a lot of risk-averse publishers out there. And to focus on sequels or licensed properties is not healthy for the industry.
So having Arcade or XNA out there, I think hopefully will create another avenue where people, where great designers and creators can actually come up with innovative ideas that might then have an opportunity to break into the larger retail world, right? Where today, it's for a publisher, you get something that's, you know, pretty different. I mean, Viva Pinata walks in the door, okay, hey, you're gonna have your garden of paper mache animals.
Get these, they're pinatas, and you look after them.
There's going to be these bad red pinatas coming in. Can you greenlight a $20 million project? That's a pretty tough thing for a publisher to say, but...
Do the pinatas have guns?
And of course, there's prototypes, you know, you can do prototyping things and things like that, but even prototypes cost a lot more money than they used to.
How much is it episodic gaming going to be coming? Because actually, John Hite was at a panel at the Independent Game Summit, and he said that Sony is planning to introduce some kind of episodic, kind of mid, I'm presuming mid price point games, more like $20 games. Is that Arcade has always been very structured up to the $15 clear differential to the retail?
Yeah, I don't think it's about Arcade necessarily. I mean, obviously with Xbox Live, we have a great distribution network for that kind of content. It's really up to the content creators to come up with content that would actually earn the moniker episodic content. Lots of people talk about episodic content. It's a holy grail for some people, and they'll try to shoehorn expansion packs and things like that and call it episodic content. Now, it is a reason why we established our partnership with Peter Jackson, for example, that we announced late last year. Our deal with Peter is not about, you know, a film guy who wants to come and make video games. There's plenty of those guys, and our deal with them is not about, hey, let's get some of Peter's movie properties and bring them over here. The goal, I believe, if we're going to become a mainstream form of entertainment, right, not just a hardcore form of entertainment, that we've got to figure out how we're going to marry great storytelling with interactivity. And some of that may come from within the industry, but I also believe that there's an opportunity for us to bring great storytellers like Peter. And specifically what we're working with him on is developing two episodic series.
And that's some really interesting challenges. Like Shane said, the infrastructure's there. If you think of the design challenges, you've got two really big fundamental problems with episodic content that content creators have to overcome. One is, how do you produce like a week's worth of content in a week? Especially when, if you think about the way games are developed at the moment, you've got that huge lag time up front where you're creating your tools and your pipelines and your engine, so there's that. The other side of it is let's say it's not weekly, let's say it's bi-weekly or monthly, but on a regular basis. You know what it's like. You pick up a game, you get really good at it. You put it down for like 2 weeks, go play something else, you come back and you suck. It's like, can you imagine like constantly having to jump into like, you know, really engaged game every month and be good at it again? So you've got this sort of control problem that you have to solve as well, which is, I think, a really interesting design problem for the industry. And I think we've got some amazing people, like your partner Peter Jackson, working on those kind of issues.
In Bungie, to be clear. So we hope to help establish a model that can be successful for other people. It's not just going to be about what we do, but again, provide an example for third parties on our platform, what's possible on Xbox 360, on Xbox Live, and make sure that people understand it's the best place to develop that kind of content.
So just to clarify, is there an opportunity for publishers to go outside Xbox Live Arcade with paid digital standalone content right now, or are you guys going to go first and then open it up?
No, I don't run the great concept.
Yeah,
I don't run the third party side. So yeah, people came with a great concept that was missing. There's the full spectrum from Arcade to MMOs, mm-hmm. right? And so people come with great concepts. There's no limit to what we're... The only limit has been the space limit.
Yeah.
It's like the MMO side. You know, we worked with Square Enix first to get their MMO on Xbox 360. You know, so there's no like, well, you can't do it until first party have done it, but often publishers want to kind of see it can work. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that Shane's group often takes on is, okay, we're really going to push the envelope and show you can actually do this.
I found it really interesting in the stats you guys released, something like 70% of users, I think it was 70% of the users had downloaded content from Marketplace, something like that. Going kind of back to the question about Midway games.
Just don't get your paper.
No, not at all. When you guys see things like certain publishers that won't be named charging on Xbox Live for cheats, for strategies, I think a lot of gamers see that, and it gives them a very negative impression of like the kind of kind of the tone of Xbox Live. Oh, it's sort of the Wild West where anybody can charge for anything.
Yeah.
Do you guys see yourselves in the future kind of stepping in and being sort of a riding roughshod?
You know,
I'll tell you what,
we provide guidelines for publishers. And as a publisher, I don't want the service telling me what we should do, what we can and can't do. I mean, certification is a different issue. But business practices, you know, whether it comes to publishing great titles or crappy titles, or whether or not I'm going to overcharge you for something that, you know, has no customer value, I mean, that's a publisher decision, in my opinion. And if a publisher wants to make, you know, for whatever reason, wants to make a bad decision, or does make a bad decision, that publisher has to be held accountable for that. It is unfortunate because I do think that when you have those bad examples out there, it can cast some feelings about the entire service overall. My general impression is that it really actually tends to go more toward the publisher and the developer than it does to the overall service. And a lot of that has to be, you know, I think it's because we've done a pretty good job of building the service and the value of the service.
But you also get roped in on that.
We do.
How you want to be.
We do. Yeah. We do. But we don't want to go into specific examples, but I tend to think that most of the emotion is pointed toward the publisher. And if the publishers are smart, they're going to learn from that. Other publishers certainly learn from that, right? And, you know, trying to find what is the sweet spot for what do you charge, what do you give, you know, what do you, what's free, what's sponsored, how much do you
it's
charge?
It's relatively a new area.
It is.
So people are
it is.
Testing the grounds.
It really is. And some, you know, some publishers think they have more power than they may, you know, and customers are going to let them know whether or not that's true.
Right? I guess for a really quick follow-up to that, maybe not if playing, fight, breakup or whatever like that for you guys, but are you thinking of moving to, like, standardized tiers of content? So, like, you have to have this much content to charge this many points. You have to have this much content.
It's really hard to set yourself up as kind of, like, the arbiter of what the right business model is between, like, the publisher and their customer. And we try to want to make sure as much as possible we don't get in that way, because, like you're saying, it is new. There is innovation going on. You've got to be very careful. Like, to allow innovation, yeah, a few bad things will happen. And, you know, I think in the end, consumers will hold their publishers accountable for whatever, you know, they think they have a good or bad experience. So we do have to be careful we don't try to step in too much in between. Go, well, we're the arbiters of everything that's good and cool. And by doing that, either stifle innovation or prevent publishers from actually reaching their customers. We need to let that kind of relationship happen.
I don't know that if it's that different than the retail relationship either, right? I mean, you go to Best Buy, and Best Buy is not telling every publisher what they can and can't charge for their titles. Now, the smart publishers are working in concert with the retailers about what the appropriate price point should be. But, you know, when you look at what our tiering is from a royalty standpoint, for example, we enable publishers to price their titles at different tiers. And it's publishers will decide if they're going to charge 59 or 39 or whatever.
Well, the problem is that the average gaming public doesn't know that, and they're not as savvy as maybe the people that read our sites.
Yeah.
The average consumer, if they see that, they're not going to really associate EA with that, because in a weird way, it's on their 360, and this is what
sure.
they're familiar with.
Sure.
So, I mean, there's not any sort of, on his question, no plans to ever standardize that or do such?
I'm not a big fan of it,
okay.
Personally. I mean, I think you have to... To me, it's no different than working with the game developers on, hey, here are the best practices. Here's how you get the most out of Xbox Live. Here's how the most that you get out of the hardware. And the same is true on the publisher side. You know, our account managers working with the third-party publishers. This is either what we've done and had success with or failed with in first party, or this is what, you know, EA has done versus, you know, Activision. I'm not on the third-party side, so I don't know. Actually, know if you can do that. But no, this is what other publishers have done that has been successful. This is where it bit them in the ass. So I think that is the best way. What Chris said, you know, saying, "Hey, you've got to have so much content for to be able to charge this." Mm-hmm. I just don't think that's going to work.
We have about 5 minutes left, so I have time for a couple more.
Regarding Halo 3.
Pardon me.
Regarding Halo 3.
Still coming 2007.
That's good. I like that.
I'm wondering. Couple crackdowns, you
know that?
Yeah.
Master Chief and Cortana totally hook up.
So, why was the decision made to deliver the beta via Crackdown as opposed to, say, like Shadowrun is doing it?
We could have made the beta available, I guess, in multiple ways. I mean, we just felt that
you did.
Yeah, we did, but the one really mass way, guaranteed way to get into the beta program, to get an invitation to the beta program, is through Crackdown. It's going to be interesting. Crackdown's selling really well
right
now. We can debate whether that's because of Crackdown or because of the beta invitation. I don't really care. I'm going to be really happy about Crackdown selling really well. You know, we're going to have an interesting thing where we're going to have, you know, we need to get enough people on there to truly test the beta. I mean, the beta is actually important for the development for Halo 3. We have to be careful that we don't get so many people, though, in the beta that we overwhelm our testing capabilities. At the end of the day, it just came down to, you know, picking a title. The timing of the title actually maps pretty well to when we wanted to announce the beta would be available and so forth. Shadowrun's not coming out till later this spring. So
then the Halo 3 beta in June?
Halo 3 beta this spring. Just depends on where you live, I guess. I will tell you, Halo 3 development is on track and great.
How do you like Halo 3?
Well, come on, Andy, you know that's not a nice question. It's well known in the industry that I have motion sickness and I can't play PlayStation. Why do you have to bring that up?
Sorry.
In front of the blogging community, Dean Takahashi outed me several years ago. I heard Halo's a great game.
Episodic content. You mentioned that Peter Jackson's working on two episodic series. Is that going to be episodic, like Sam and Max episodic, or episodic, like Half-Life 2 Star Wars episodic?
You know, I probably said more than I was supposed to about the Peter Jackson stuff. They're two interactive series. Specifically how they're going to be broken up, and that's all. We're in the design phase now with Peter and with Bungie on that stuff. I mean, the important thing is that the first series is going to be set in the Halo universe, and we felt that that was very important. If we're going to do something innovative in terms of the delivery model, in terms of the customer model, and so forth, that we wanted to start with a property that would give it a fair amount of probability of success. Halo's a pretty good bet for us in our portfolio.
But from a publishing standpoint, I mean, what kind of episodic model do you think works better?
Honestly, I mean, we're still figuring that out. I mean, we don't know. I don't think there's really good examples out there yet for us to look at. Trying to balance how often we will deliver content, right, and how quickly you can produce it, going back to what Chris said, right? And how quickly consumers want to consume it and stay with it. I mean, those are all pretty tricky things to do in the interactive world. It's not like the television space where you can end an episode of Lost and leave the cliffhanger and people will come back a week later and so forth. So. It's actually pretty complicated to figure out how you're going to tell a story, end the episode, make sure it's part of an overall story arc, and so forth.
Is Bungie involved in the second series with Peter Jackson?
Don't know yet.
How worried are you about rumors that Sony's working on a blend of avatars and achievements?
There's...
Well, so there's flippant answers, and then do you know what? If it's innovation and consumers love it, I think it's cool that they worked on it. I'd come back to, we got 6 million engaged gamers on live, and a whole portfolio of games going to have 320 by the end of this year, and that's why people buy consoles, is to play great games.
Chris,
I think it's interesting, but the other one that I have a problem with, it's not integrated into games experience. Like, kind of, I want to play games on a console and I want to do voice chat and everything else. I don't want to have to just go to the dash every time I want to do anything. So, from what I've heard about it, the rumors I've seen, I'm not so worried right now.
I mean, I think Chris is being, the reason why I hesitate is because Chris is being more polite than I am. I'm trying to think about how I would say. I mean, the truth of the matter is, and I don't think we've had to do anything here, right? Which is that there's been a lot of promises and a lot of visionary statements and so forth coming out of
we
the
still
other.
Don't have 4D graphics yet.
coming out of the other camp, right? And so I look at it as, hey, it's along those lines. The one thing I would say is that that's all about software. I mean, it's all about software, and we're the software company in this competition, and I feel really good about, again, what we've established in terms of Xbox Live and XNA and so forth. I know we're putting in place the foundation to be able to enable those types of experiences, and I know that we have the ability to deliver on that. I have greater confidence in our ability to deliver on those kinds of scenarios, assuming we want to go down that path. So, you know, it's fine to, you know, make, it's a keynote address, and you can make, you know, you can make visionary statements. I hope that that's, you know, what the keynote is used for, more for. But again, it's going to be, can you, you know, are you really going to deliver that? When are you going to deliver that? How much credibility and equity are you burning up? You know, have you burned up to get, you know, to this point, and will people believe you?
Well, there are historical battles with giant crabs that really happen. So, you got to watch those keynotes.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Speaking of the keynote, we'll let you go so you can head over to the keynote. Starts in about an hour. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much,
guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks.